This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
If you're a big fan of Lies of Locke Lamora, I think this kind of can scratch that itch.
It's a fast-paced romp. I did like it overall. It was fun.
So did I. Welcome everyone to the Tudor Round Podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we're reviewing a book. This is our eighth book of reviewing the SPFBO winners.
Yes.
This is the very first winner, the book that started the whole competition. Now, this is The Thief Who Pulled on Trouble's Braids by Michael McClung.
Yes.
Now, this won the very first award, SPFBO winner, in, what was it, 2013?
In 2015.
2015,
the book was written in
2012.
Yeah, the book was written in 2012, this won in 2015, and this is Mark Lawrence's competition that Rich and I are part of, where we're judging all of the winners of the past 10 years. And again, like you said, this is the eighth one. We're judging and ranking, and we're giving spoiler-free thoughts on it first.
Yep.
Spoiler-free first.
Spoiler-free thoughts, and then we're going to go into the plot snapshot, then full spoilers. We'll warn you when it's time.
Yes.
But Austin, can you give us any more details about the book?
Yes. This is a fast-paced romp for this book, Thief Who Pulled on Trouble's Braids, where our main character, Amira, she's in this thievery world where there's magic and dogs, and she runs into her somewhat friend acquaintance in the businesses, Corbin. Corbin. Who says, hey, here, take this thing. I got somebody I'm meeting later today. Just hold on to this for a second. And watch over my dog. I'll be back. And he dies. And Corbin dies. And now she has this thing. And she's going, well, Corbin, you know, she's not in love with the guy. He's a bit of this wise guy, who lady, not womanizer, but, you know, as close as you can possibly get. Maybe he is.
Yeah, he's a womanizer.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
We don't see much of him because he dies very early on. And she is now pulled into this quest of finding out who killed him. Why? What's going on here? And that's your setup of the story. And if you like your more fast-paced romps, action, and just a straightforward story, not in a degrading way, just it's very quick, and the chapters are fast too. It's also a very short book as well. So if people want to pick up a quick read, I did like it overall. It was fun.
So did I. I did quite like it. Now, I think a big part of this, the reason why I liked it, is it was the right length for the right type of book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Of it's not trying to go for something else and then misses the mark. No, it's going for a really fun action adventure. Little bit of mystery added into it with some actually more endearing characters of, like, mm-hmm, well-written characters.
Yeah, so, your main character, Amira, it's the archetype you've seen before of that lead cast who's a bit edgy. And there's this one line that really got me connected to her character, where she was talking about how guys have been in and out of her house. The guys never stayed. Her knives did. You know, she's got knives all over her house. And Michael McClung paints a really good picture for this, what is an archetypal character, but written in a fun way.
Yeah.
That makes her both believable and rooted in the story. The protagonist, nothing special, nothing crazy, but you'll get the type right away, and the character voice very early on, and you could follow.
This character is very similar to the female main character of what is the Multiple Britons?
Darker Shade of Magic?
Darker Shade of Magic. Similar archetype of, like, almost feels like one-to-one type of character, but names are hard. Amira is significantly better.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed her character a lot more than the one in A Darker Shade of Magic.
Agreed. What do you think about the book as well? What would you say, spoiler-free, for people who would want to pick it up or not, and expectations to set?
Sure. It's a fun short mystery with good action. I think the best aspect of the book is both the world and the characters. The characters are enjoyable to follow, and I think the world adds enough mystery that gets you wanting to, like, hey, well, what's the come? What's the next book? What it asks enough questions, leaves it ambiguous enough without it doesn't overexplain, but also gives you enough. It sets the tone correctly.
Yeah, the world has the reveals you get. You don't get a lot of the details. It asks a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And how I'd explain it is the world at first, especially getting our point of view from Amira, feels urban fantasy, but there's an epic fantasy underlaying in the backdrop. There's an epic fantasy world, but we're getting the more urban, close-up, zoomed-in version in this story.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of the questions you get of all this epic fantasy stuff going on. This is not an epic fantasy, but you get droppings of it. Like, oh, there's a lot more going on here. Mm-hmm. That's cool. So I gave the book a 3.5 star. Good.
Yeah. I gave it a 3.25. Somewhat good. Yeah.
Neat. Yeah. Our category breakdown is here down below. Now, to set people's expectation too, you say somewhat good, I say good. Yeah, this isn't, you know, you got to go read this right now. Mm-hmm. For me, but I think if it hits the right reader, this could be something, and a quick in-between read, an in-between book, mm-hmm. that if you're looking for a different tone and style, looking for more entertainment, this one will hit a fix for a lot of people, I think.
I agree.
And for others, here's the overall rating it had in 2015 when the book was in the competition and won. It got an average of an 8 overall. The highest rating was from Fantasy Book Review, who gave it a 9. And then the lowest was from Elitist Book Reviews, who gave it a 6.5. And I'm going to double check that because I want to make sure I didn't get the person that gave it a 9 wrong. All right, and we're back. Yes, I did get that wrong. It was the Speculative Book Review that gave it a 9, and Bookworm Blues gave it a 6.5.
Got it.
Yes, I want to make sure I didn't get the name wrong for who gave it that score. So that was your range of scores. And the second book that year got a 7.75 overall, shy of the 8 overall that were this one. One. So what does that mean for us, Rich? Of where does this rank?
I don't know. You have the list.
I do have the list. Okay. And let me do some calculations. We'll be right back. Okay. So here it is. We got 3.5 and a 3.5, 3.25. That makes it a 7.75. Yes? Yes?
No.
What? Oh, 6.75. What a dumbass. Oh my God. Keep that in, Nick. I don't deserve to get that cut out. That's a 6. Is that a 6.75?
I really could have answered that, like giving you the correct answer, but yeah. I thought just no was
no. That's
sufficient.
That's a 6.75. So with that total score, that comes in just shy of our total of a 7 for where loyalties lie, which was a 7 out of 10. So this one is now in 5th place of 8. It's above Small Miracles and below Where Loyalties Lie.
That sounds about right. I am satisfied with that.
Me too. So that The Thief Who Pulled on Trouble's Way, number 5 for us. We still have 2 more books to read. We'll see where it ends up placing overall, but that is that.
Sounds good.
All right. So that's where it placed. We got all that done. Anything else you want to say in spoiler-free?
Spoiler 3, if you're a big fan of Lives of Locke Lamora, I think this kind of can scratch that itch. It's a similar setting, similar type of characters and storytelling. So if you like that, you may want to check this out.
All right, let's do it then. This is your spoiler warning. Click off if you do not want to be spoiled about this book, okay? Warning, warning, warning. Plot snapshot. Let's talk about it. Okay. So that inciting incident, so Corbin's dead. She's like, what is this toad?
Yes. Amira has this weird golden toad from Corbin and is now going around. She's fairly determined, like, hey, I'm going to try and find the person who killed Corbin. Her investigation leads her through multiple encounters, including Baron Oskill, who is Corbin's brother. She gets caught by the coppers, mm-hmm. and then she can sense some type of magic, so she goes over to Holgrin, the local magician that she's had some dealings with, to have him remove the tracking spell that the detective or Inspector Kluge put on her.
Inspector Kluge, I like it.
This is important to say of, like, it is Amira and Holgren's kind of story. They're a little buddy cop duo. And so Amira then tries to basically because she knows who set the contract out to get this golden toad from Corbin. She goes and investigates that house. It's some rich landlord owner. And so she breaks into the house, finds out some magic bullshit's going on. She barely escapes. And she finds she's torn between that and the person who contracted the whole thief, the whole heist to get this golden toad and whatever's inside. And then there's also the coppers. The inspector is on her tail. Then there's ultimate, what comes around to it is the Red Hand, this deity figure that also wants this golden toad. And so
a lot of people want this.
A lot of people want it. I'm trying to, like, really shorten it down with, like, trying to condense more
midpoint,
of things.
Midpoint, through shenanigans, she ends up, want to get to the midpoint where she ends up in prison.
She ends up in prison. By Inspector Kluge. Mm-hmm. The Baron Oskill brings her out of jail after she shows that she was a genuine friend to Corbin. Mm-hmm. And they work together to actually
take his killer down. That's Corbin's brother.
Yep. Who we find out was also a secret... mm-hmm. secret baron or, you know, yes. secret nobility. Mm-hmm. And they then stage a whole siege against the I'm trying to get the actual name right. It's Bosch. Bosch is the person in charge. They're trying to make a siege against Bosch. Bosch is actually this weird magician. And they kill a bunch of people. They find they're trying to open up a hell gate. My God, I am going, like, I am... There's a lot. There's a lot of things.
A lot of things happen in this.
A lot of things happen. It's real quick. Yeah. Like, it goes by quick, but there is a lot. Mm. Then they fail to kill Bosch officially. There's a hit contract out on her. Like, so people are gunning for her, assassins. Ultimately, it comes down to the Red Hand, this deity god figure, says, "Hey, Amira, give me the toad. There's
a
weapon
in
there."
And she found out that toad has this blade of some goddess in there, 1/8 of the blade. And turns out that this guardian, Amat, is not his name, but Amat's one of those guardian people of this past time before Cataclysm and all this world-building stuff. And that blade does...
It could kill gods,
It
apparently.
Could kill suns, everything. Yes. And so that's where the Red Hand wants that blade.
Yep. And so after Holgren and Amira kill Bosch, the person who... The magician who has been messing with her and made the main contract out on Corbin, ultimately tortured him. Then we get the fight with Amira, Holgren, and the Red Hand, Eris, where basically Amira after the Red Hand kills himself with the sword, Amira grabs up the sword and is able to basically destroy the sword with the sword. She uses the stone to destroy the stone. She has a Thanos moment. And then we find out the ultimate mystery. The person who actually killed Corbin was his spurned lover. Mm-hmm. Lady of the Night, who basically Corbin was ditching for the younger, hotter model. Mm-hmm. Basically, he DiCaprio'd her. and so she got him killed. And then we see Baron Oskill at the very end say, "Yeah, I'm going to basically poison her. I'm going to give her a gift. And then she's going to die a real painful way."
And we'll get into more details now with the full review. You ready?
Yep.
All right. Emotional impact. What'd you give it out of 5 stars?
3.25.
Somewhat good?
Pretty good. Yeah.
I give it 3.5 good. Matches my overall. Matches your overall as well. Yep. Yeah, this was what this one's going for. A lot of your action fun. I thought what was done really well in this book for me was the fight scenes, the mages fighting or her in endless fight scenarios, and also following her point of view and just her quirkiness. It actually worked for me too. In a different book in a different style could come off a little bit off-putting of just eye rolling, but she was so extremely a part of this universe. It was I loved how it took the concept of just not guilds, what's the right word? It took the concept of thievery and bounties and all that kind of, I guess you associate with pirates or whatever the context mm-hmm. would be. It took it to such a fun extreme. It really leaned into the John Wickiness of it.
Sure.
I'm looking for a synonym franchise that's out there. I guess, you know, your Jason Bournes, you have your John Wicks. It really leans into that and it makes it fun.
Yeah, I especially liked the scene where she is going into she's casing and breaking into the mansion.
Yeah.
Of just showing her thought process of going like, yeah, she actually is a very prudent thief. She's not just great at everything. She's prudent. She mm-hmm. actually, hey, I need to case the joint. I'm going to be slow, methodical, careful. And that whole setup made it very enjoyable. Then seeing how she was pushing herself for time, mainly due to personal reasons, rather than doing what she would normally do professionally. And then the emotional heart of it, kind of the little scene spread out of Amira sees herself as far more jaded and sees herself as a, you know, standoffish figure, very antisocial. Like, oh, yeah, I don't have friends. Like, I have professional acquaintances. But basically, many people in her life actually do see her as a friend. And that's kind of her journey, figuring out, like, actually, people kind of like me a lot more than I thought. Because I'm not the worst person ever. I actually, you know, keep my promises.
Yeah.
So all of those little scenes I enjoyed, especially with her. And I'm trying to remember the name of the woman who took care of her after she got out of the house. Mm-hmm. What was her name?
Starts with an E, that person?
Maybe. I don't think so. Anyway, the woman who's in charge of the stables, who is basically mm-hmm. making a, you know, the fantasy horse magic drawn bus.
The omnibus, yeah.
Yeah, the omnibus. Yeah, yeah. And finding out that Amira actually did save her husband and treats her very kindly, but also not too smotheringly.
Mm-hmm.
And Amira can appreciate it. She, when she's with her fence, the person who sets her up with gigs, and finding out that he actually did try to get her out of jail, but not overly so. He wasn't, but him just speaking matter-of-factly, and she's like, why would you help me? It's like, you've always kept your agreements? Like, you're a significant part of my business. Why wouldn't I? I don't know. Like, you've never done me wrong, and that's saying something.
Felt like I owed you something, right?
Yeah. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
So just her finding out that her good character has not gone unnoticed was touching. Those mm-hmm. scenes were good.
Yeah, you got to see a lot of these. Yeah, okay, I'm going to find it. The Skyrim-esque nature of it. I'm going to find it. By the end of this video, I'm going to find it. I'm going to damn find it. But her going from house to house or place to place and kind of having this collection of mm-hmm. acquaintances, friends, ranging from, well, enemies to friends. And it's funny, the one time when now Bosch at the end of the book, and he has Lockwood and has captured Lockwood in the end and has a knife to his throat and is threatening, like, hey, I'm going to kill, start with Lockwood, then everybody you know, and I'm going to go through them all. And she's like, well, I don't even really like Lockwood.
I did like that. She's like,
she goes, well, I mean,
I
okay.
I don't like Lockwood.
And then secondly,
two, I don't have a lover. I don't have any family.
What are you gonna,
I don't even really have that many. I don't really
I'm just
have
finding
friends.
Out people kind of like me. So it was fun to see that lighthearted nature of it. Because
yeah.
The book, I guess the emotional moments, was there anything where you were gearing toward was trying to make you cry or anything like that? Or you more so had this consistent tone of just fun?
I don't think it's trying to go for that. It's not trying to make you know, ball your eyes out.
Yeah.
Like, even, like...
It's wholesome. And,
it's not,
in this gritty
it's not
world.
Overplaying Corbin's death, even. Mm-hmm. Of Amira sees more as, like... She liked Corbin well enough, friendly, but she's not bawling her eyes out either because they haven't... Super long connection. But it's more of a... It's a little bit professional courtesy of, like, hey, who's gonna kill... Like, you don't get to kill
mm-hmm.
my buddy. No, that's... But... It's all kept at a little bit of an emotional distance.
You see a bit of the magic where Corbin comes back in that vision scene and mm-hmm. she thinks about him a little bit more. And
yeah.
You get a little bit of that. But I guess if this book could have went higher for you, why was it a 3-2-5? What would you want more out of this?
more of it. Mm-hmm. To keep to what the book actually is, I think I would have appreciated a bit more bigger twists in the story that like maybe shocks me or awes me. For the most part, any kind of twists and reveals was not as emotionally shocking. Same thing with any kind of character moment. There wasn't anything deeper that made me really think about it. So it's, I didn't have too much of an emotional journey with the character or any kind of surprise from the plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. I think the big twist with Corbin is, it wasn't the gods. It was just the
spurned lover.
It was a spurned lover. Ah, that's the twist on it. What did you see it coming, or just weren't floored by it? What did you think? What did you think of the big crux of, hey, that's the twist?
I wasn't, okay, maybe this is, I think if I thought about it any more than I did, I probably would have saw it coming, but I didn't think about it. But when it came, I was like, I wasn't that floored by it. It was fine. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, makes sense.
Makes sense, yeah. Yeah, just a fun time for me. Yeah, same with you as well. There was nothing that exceeded it to make me emote. Mm-hmm. Do anything outside of that. I think the part I was most emotionally invested in, that of what it's going for, the action, was every action scene written very well and was fun, especially when Holgrin they battled for the first time and like had his head chopped off and was still blinking, and I'm going, what's going on in this fight scene? This is another one of the fun quirks that just made the world a bit fun, but emotionally it was cool to see. I think it was with that head. Was it that scene where with that head they like put it into a bag, or just walking around town with it, and people, it gave you a vibe because other people didn't really bat an eye because they want to give the benefit of the doubt. Like, that could be anything. Blood, any type of blood could be leaking out of that bag. It's not even a scene that's focused on, really. It's just a cut walk scene, right?
Yeah,
and that's all it is. But it's just
her just going. Yeah, people. Like, it's the common courtesy. It gives them plausible deniability. They don't want to be involved either. Yeah. They just...
Hey, they know bad shit goes on here. They have things to do, all right? They're just going to say, hey, I didn't see the head. I just saw a bag with a bowling ball shape inside it leaking blood. That's okay. It's okay. So a lot of that made it more fun for me. But yeah, good overall. Want to go on to thought-provokingness or anything else? Okay. What'd you give thought-provokingness out of 5 stars?
2.75.
Fair.
Slightly disappointing.
I was between... And you're rating this, but I think you're right to rate this. I gave it a 3, neutral.
Yeah.
What's the thing that was slightly disappointing? Somewhat disappointing.
Somewhat.
Yeah, yeah.
We gotta get our words right.
Yeah. So what was somewhat disappointing about it?
The somewhat disappointing angle, and it's a slight, but the what it's actually going for is basically Amira has to learn to trust others and open up is effectively it, and somewhat power of friendship type of deal. It's okay, but it's not really, there's, for the power of friendship type of deal, it would have been better for, like, there are little moments that she is leaning on others and she's learning to she's more forced to depend on others, but there's no moment when she actually decides to help, like, get others' help. She's more of a, for the most part, she's being forced into these scenarios, especially by the end with her confronting the Red Hand. She goes to do it herself, but Holgrin does join her. And so, but kind of forcefully. So I would have appreciated maybe a change moment or something a bit more. But even then, it's just
trust and friendship.
You could have done more. That's all.
Yeah, would you say that's one of the main themes, is that trust? Anything else there that stuck out to you mainly?
I think that's about it. I mean, is it going for anything else?
Because her stubbornness and her willing to fight, a little bit of that. I think
that's all good stuff. Yeah, that's not anything chew worthy.
Yeah, the thing for me that I guess put it to more neutral about it. The interesting thing to think about, a lot of the emotions that she's describing in the end when taking down the knife, of like, hey, like hate and love are close. It's more apathy and like focusing on your will to not feel a bit of that in the end when taking down the eighth mm-hmm. blade. A bit of that conversation, and especially it being linked back to the human emotion of just envy, of how with all these grand things going on and there's this cataclysm and gods and Red Hand who's lived 1700 years, there's all this big kapow, big explosion stuff going on the surface, but the whole mystery just being, hey, it was Corbin. It was a Corbin lover thing. It was just because of envy. Like, really, all this flashy stuff could be going on, but at the root of it was just, someone was jealous. And I think what it did do well was the just focusing on that human emotion of that was more the core of the story than it was the explosions. I think if it leaned more into the explosions, I would have been like, yeah, pretty disappointed. But again, I'm not giving it good or anything because I do think most of the things of what you're talking about, of the trust and friendship, there's a lot of that more surface level stuff, which, hey, I don't think the story's focused on like, oh, let me say a really profound message about trust.
Yeah,
it's there to serve the character and the story. And the thing that just makes it more interesting for me is that thing of the human motion of envy being focused on a little bit more. But yeah.
I also do want to say the reason why I'm only saying somewhat disappointed mm-hmm. and not actually flawed is mm-hmm. there are moments where she is being forced and confronted with having to depend on others when she doesn't seem to want to depend on others.
Right.
Now, on that hand, she also doesn't seem that reluctant to rely on others either. So if she's kind of if that's the lesson, she's not really that reluctant in the beginning, because she goes immediately when she senses, oh, magic's on me, like, yep, let me go to Holgrin. She goes around and like is actually, she does have connections. She's keeps it professional. She just doesn't see it going very beyond professional, or at least she doesn't see it herself. But she does lean on others. She, I guess, discovers she kind of has friends. I don't know. It's just way too in the middle for me to give it much.
Yeah,
more.
A little bit of hers was more so that, is it professional? You know, is it a coworker or is it a friend?
Yeah.
That seems to be a bit of the question. Are we just doing this for pure business, or are we doing this podcast because we somewhat, you know?
Yeah.
It's a bit of that question.
That's all. That's the eternal question you have to ask with us. Is it purely business, or is it?
Is there more?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I related to that question. But yeah, I also did. Yeah, we're close enough anyway. So, the 3.275, it's a 0.25 difference. Let's just say 2.82. Did I get the math right? Is the average of that? I just want to make up for my previous math mistake. God, did I 5, 6, 7? 8.25. 8.25. Yeah, hell yeah. All right, character time. You ready?
All right.
Anything else for themes or
nah?
No. Characters. Would you give out 5 stars?
I gave it 3.25.
Someone good. Again.
Though
I gave it a 3.5.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. I may want to raise that a little bit higher. The more
2.35?
I think I want to raise that to a 3.5.
Yeah, nice.
There's no character I would particularly want to change that much. Nothing dragged as far as the characters go. But why did you give it a 3.5?
So, okay, negative first or positive first?
Let's go the positive.
Yeah. Good overall, nice. Yeah. The good overall positive first is focuses on Myra and her character. And I think even though these can come across as archetypes, it's the special description of moments each character is given that makes them more unique and makes a Myra rootable and different. I think the author does a really good job at doubling, tripling, quadrupling down at her quirks and her flaws and her wants as mm-hmm. well, where how she has her trust issues as well, being in this world of how she has a knife in every single floorboard and wall to everywhere she mm-hmm. has a knife, and just how she is her quips also worked for me as well. So anytime she was talking with not Hagrid, I keep want to say Hagrid,
Holgrin.
Talking with Holgrin, and every character she interacts with, of that theme we talked about of her trusting a friend or coworker, she always came across as straight business, and that was rooted in some type of insecurity that mm-hmm. you felt throughout the story. So it teetered with this fun play of, hey, we get to have a fun, fast plot because Amira is just no business. Like, let's get to it. But at the same time, this was the thing. It was her battling with, is she helping Corbin because it's just business, or is she helping Corbin because, you know, she kind of, you know, she liked him. He was a friend. Was it just the oath of, you know, following the oath of the thieves? Or, you know, is there something more than that? Because there was a key thing at the beginning of the book where Corbin, you know, he's a womanizer, like lady guy, and you know, he'll try to woo everybody. And there was a line where she said, you know, Corbin at one time, you know, tried to feel up on her, and she said no, denied it, and he never did anything again. But she goes, sometimes I wish I didn't do that. But no. So yeah. There's a little bit of that
but it
playfulness.
Was a small,
yeah.
But it was it wasn't a deep regret or anything.
No.
It was just playful.
It was just, hey, what if? You know?
And she's going like, on one hand, hey, it's great to have a friend that actually, you know, respects me well enough and is not like pushing my boundaries. But also, sometimes I wish he would push my boundaries a little bit. Come on.
And so it was that. It was the constant question of like, you know, she's doing... The plot drive for her is it just business or is there more than that? You could always tell the underneath that there is more to it. She's not just that. So it wasn't just a one-dimensional, this is who she is. There was more to it.
Yeah, and part of that is her insecurity. She mentioned about like her scars, like she's a crooked nose.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
And like different, she even like she goes bald in this one.
Yeah,
it's like shows she has like these, like physical, what is the right word?
Insecurities.
It's physical insecurities. Yeah, and so she's not supposed to be like just the most gorgeous woman ever, and then has also these insecurities. Like, it seems genuine, like reasonable enough insecurities of why she would develop these insecurities in the first place. But then again, the people surrounding her don't overdo it. There's a real trope that I really don't like where the surrounding characters just layer it on thick of how much they love our main character, that she's just the best at this and she's the best at this and the best of us, and just lays it on a little too thick, where ultimately she's acknowledged as a competent thief. Okay. She's good at what she does. Very professional. And the reason why people like her is not like, oh, she's just the kindest, or, oh, she's just this saint among us, or she's just so good at everything she does. No, she's just an honest thief. She keeps her promises. You know, when she makes a contract, she follows through, and she's not overtly cruel. So when she can help someone and it's, you know, no cost to her particularly, she will. It's like, hey, this person's not involved. I want to saves the coach driver or coach owner because he got stuck with the wrong crowd and she was there. And all these little things that she's just built up a good rapport with people, and people are like, yeah, I'll pay that in kind.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's it. They're not overly praising her, which would have just felt awkward and weird.
Yeah.
So this, it just made sense.
It's the better version of Lila, what you were saying in Dark Shadow Magic. Yeah.
What really drew me to this was her fence, you know, her fixer. And they have this playful back and forth. And then her finding out, like, hey, you tried to get me out. You tried to get me out of prison?
It's that moment.
I made the attempt. I couldn't do it. I mean, it's hard to do that when a noble, but. So he's not like, oh, I need to organize
a
rescue partner.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, I tried to bribe the guard to let you out, but
it didn't work.
It's like, why would you even try? He's like, you understand how much business you've done for me? Like, everyone that I work with stabs me in the back at some point or another. you always keep your word. You do the contract. You've always succeeded. You've fulfilled the contract. And then you don't stiff me. So, yeah. Of course, this is an investment. You're an investment. Why would I want you to go away?
The key thing there is that reciprocity of you read a different character like this in Darker Shade. There's so many examples of this. So if somebody likes Darker Shade, just think of a different example where it annoys you, right? Where the character feels undeservingly praised of just, hey, you just met this person and you're willing to say, oh, this is the wittiest person I've ever met. Oh my God, can I spend the rest of my life with you? Or they lay their life on, they do something extreme that doesn't seem equal to the amount of wowness that the character, our protagonist, represented. Yeah. You feel your protagonist should earn that kind of respect and reward or whatever it might be. And in this case, it's all in the background. And just that little small scene where the fixer is saying that means a lot to just show. And that didn't have to be in the book. You know, that is there for the character work. And again, back to the theme of the story. So.
And you compare that to the coach drivers, the coach owners, mm-hmm. of a little bit more. They're going a little bit beyond of the wife of the coach driver, actually like taking her in of like, nope, like, hey, I'm going to clean up your wounds. I'm going to help you. Like, he's pretty forceful at helping her and really wants to treat her. Like I said, hey, it's just so you know, there's a room for you under our house anytime. You've helped my husband. You saved his life, but I'm not going to force you. Mm-hmm. And so she goes above and beyond, but it makes sense of what she's done for. Mm-hmm. And the one person where you play with it, like with Holgren.
Yeah,
why is Holgren helping her? Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be this eccentric mage. Part of it is they've had some business dealings and, you know, respectful. I do think it's probably true that that's going to be the budding romance going forward. Like, Holgren probably has a crush on Amira. It's my guess.
Maybe.
But it's not overplayed. Mm-hmm. It seems far more like just a crush and just slowly developing. And so he's just more interested in her, like, all right. And they also lay it on that these magicians are just eccentric. They do what's fun. He's not doing anything really for the money. He's just doing what's the most
interesting. When she first meets him, too, she walks in there and goes, all this caution she has around Holgren of he could just end her in a second.
Yeah.
She sees what Holgren can do. And it's just this weird vibe of, hey, he likes me enough and he's not going to do that. It's just strange to know that a person can do this at any moment. And because the mages are eccentric here.
Yeah.
It just makes it feel more of that, the Baez type of wizard rather than your Gandalf type of wizard, you know?
Yeah. Especially with showing how he doesn't need money and that he just does things that are fun for him and whatever interests him most.
Also, he likes the dog.
He likes the dog. I think he also, because of how weird he is and just, you know, a more shy, introverted person, he also respects the fact that when Amira comes in the house, she's not trying to trick him. She's completely upfront and honest as soon as she gets there. Of like, hey, I may have brought the cops on you.
Another mage is tracking me right now, right?
Another mage is tracking me. I need your help. But also, hey, I have this thing. I don't know. I may be pulling you into something I don't want to. I just want you to be aware of what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to. Lace.
Like, I don't want miscommunication trope here. We're not doing a miscommunication trope. Here's the information.
Well, she also respects, like, this guy could kill me in a moment's notice. I can't. Yeah. I'm not going to try and trick him.
No.
And, like, I'm going to be upfront and honest. Take what you will.
And then when she would lie to the antagonist, she would say all the truth except one thing. So she would say, this, here's what happened. Here's how I know Corbin. Here's where we were supposed to meet. And he was supposed to give me a toad, and he didn't give me the toad. Damn it.
Yeah.
She'll just leave. She'll omit one thing to the people who are trying to, you know, kill her and get the information out of her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no, the characters were all good there. Bosch was a fun enough villain.
What could have been better for you then? Because I was going to say the antagonists were fine. You know,
I
was
ultimately,
like, Bosch to me, you know.
Yeah, he's the villain, evil bad guy.
Villain of the episode.
Yeah, he did feel like the villain of the week type of deal.
Eris, the red hand, he was very threatening and powerful, but, you know, villain. With a motivation to...
He was better than Bosch in the sense of you just got that tired feeling of him wanting to die. And so, like, you saw that coming around. But, yeah, they were all fine.
Yeah.
I probably would have preferred a little bit more personality from one of them, like something a bit more eccentric. At least for me, if you're going to have a villain of the week that's just a villain and they're evil for evil's sake, I like them a bit more over the top. Have that
Bosch
bit
was
more
the
personality.
Closest to that, you know.
Yeah. But not enough for me.
It was his over the topness was just the weirdness of his magic.
Yeah. Also, his weird confidence of every fight he gets into, he loses spectacularly. Like, ridiculously bad. Like, it never goes well. He keeps dying
and losing.
Got his
head chopped off.
Immediately. And he's then still trying to be intimidating and, like...
Yeah, it's entire,
fun. Yeah. I'm kind of going, what are you doing, man? Like, you know Holgrin's so much better than you. Why do you keep... Whatever. All right. So,
yeah,
I find that funny, but beyond that.
Overall, yeah. So you ended up giving it 3-5 good?
Right? Yeah, they're good characters.
Then want to go into plot.
Yeah.
What'd you give plot out of 5?
2.75.
Oh, somewhat disappointed.
Somewhat. Go ahead.
I gave it a 3.5 good.
Yeah, to me, there's... The pacing is definitely fast. Mm-hmm. However, to me, there were certain things of how... Because it's so fast, how things are brought up felt pretty forced at times. Mm. So after the beginning section, when we get to basically when Amira is meeting all these new characters,
yeah.
Holgrin felt very forced in the beginning to me of, all right, we immediately get the tracking spell and like, tracking spell has to go meet Holgrin. And that was the whole purpose of that tracking spell. And immediately comes in front of the Blood Witch.
The tracking spell also linked into the end with getting the hair from the bandit person. And then I think it was like the show early on, the promise like, hey, this is something that works so that we can allude later in the plot, we can use this. That type of thing, you know.
It worked, but in the moment it felt very, oh, we had to meet the magician somehow. It didn't feel as organic. Same thing with just the Blood Witch or just, all right, just met her on the street. The bald temple person who's following her around, just kind of there.
Well, he showed up a couple times. You know, he was there eyeing her, and she's going, who is this?
Yeah.
Anat person.
It just didn't feel as organic to me, and so I was like, a little disappointed.
Yeah, it's one of those... Why I did like it is it definitely the plot can feel meandering and just like, okay, we're here. There's a location. So I said Skyrim. I said John Wick. What's another one I could use here? The MMORPG nature of this, right? That's accurate. Okay. That nature of it where you're going from area to area. What I liked about it was everybody's fixation on the toad. And so everybody had some vested interest, or a lot of parties had some vested interest in getting this toad and what's so special about it. And we find out the more epic fantasy nature of, oh, apparently there's this can kill a son, and there's this goddess of horrors. And you see Anat turn into that demon thingy for a bit. And then we have Amira who feels like she has to suddenly kill him, or it gets all this kind of vice out of you when Anat shows up. But I liked how as we were meeting each of these little factions, it put her in some kind of shtick or problem. So when she at the midpoint when she was in prison, I like how that was used as the midpoint specifically too, of like, hey, her getting interrogated by what's his name?
Inspector Cloosh,
and her having to wiggle out of that while, okay, look, you know how it has that Will the Many aspect of it, where Will the Many does it better, I think, but where there's a lot of these people vying for, not her specifically, but the things she has and the information she has. I always felt like there were many antagonists that were vying to have what she had. And so she was always moving the plot in some direction. So there was always a logical reason why she had to get pulled away and get investigated here. Like, what information do you have? And now that they did this, oh no, she has to go to her mage buddy and get out of this somehow, or go to her fix. So she always had to go to which helped with the theme too. She had to go to a friend in order to solve a problem, which in the end led her to letting her guard down a little bit more and being like, oh, okay. So There's a little bit of that for me. Was there anything like any, like Act 1, Act 2, Act 3 portion of this, I guess A, B plot, talking the big macro scope of it that you didn't like, or was more so just those little moments?
It's
that
the little moments. It's why I wouldn't say it's flawed, because it all makes sense. I would probably, my change, my quibble would be to add a few more chapters, not many, but just make some of the interactions a little, feel a little bit more organic, instead of just, because it felt very much problem to immediate solve, problem, immediate solve. I would have maybe appreciated a bit more layering to it, and problem solving a different one that was handled and then eventually getting around to, just felt that would feel a little bit more organic to me. But rather than like problem, solution, problem, like just right through.
I guess the big A problem was the toad thing of like, you know, how do we solve that? Mm-hmm. And then all these mini things in between where do you think maybe I would have liked a little bit of this? Do you think too, a slow down a little bit at times of let it soak in a scene or two?
Because really could have used one or two slow down chapters with Amira, which I guess the prison one was kind of our slow down moment.
Even that felt kind of fast though.
It was.
I did like how the quick description though, like her and the other prisoner. Her just screaming at him, like, shut up. it goes back to Myers' character. She was done well. You see her character. And then,
Or just yelling that, even more creative, even more creative examples of how his mother is dead.
Your mother's dead. She got ran over by Bob, whatever she kept saying to him.
Or also, like, the prisoner, I thought it was a funny moment of she's getting out of prison and just the other prisoner throws poop at her, and the guard's like, I told you to stop throwing poop at people. What did I say I was going to do if you did that again? It's like, Amira, stay here. Don't move. It's like, I'm not moving. And the guards go in there and just beat his ass. She's like, you know what? Like, I don't feel bad for the prisoner. But I also can't feel that, thankful to the guard. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just in this real middle mood. Like, I don't like anybody, but, you know, at least it's nice. I'll say it's nice to see the guard beat up that guy for me. That's good.
That's fun.
I know it's not for me, but it's appreciated anyway. I thought that was a funny moment.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, that was good. Yes. And what do you think? Because when we're talking about the slow down a little bit or like salt, solve things later, as you're putting it. Do you see it the same way we reviewed other SPFBO books, such as Murder at the Spindle Manor, or books like, as if, does the author feel like they need to keep you engaged in every chapter, like something has to happen in order to not lose your attention? Did you feel a little bit that with this book?
Yeah, especially with that most, like a problem brought up in the beginning of the chapter is ultimately kind of solved by the end of it. And so it feels a little too, well, I would say like staccato of like beat, 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 and like problem solved, problem solved, problem solved, problem solved, rather than a mixing of all these things of we bring up a bunch of different problems and then solutions kind of filter their way through.
Yeah, I did feel a little bit of both of those in the book. Some got solved quicker, some were more big toward the plot. Like what an example of what would be an example of like a quick solve one? Was it the mage stuff of so there's this the chapter
mage,
happens the
mage
next
stuff
no one goes to get the
prison, the whole prison, like she gets stuck in prison, then just immediately taken out by the, you know, the noble. There's the siege of like, okay, we're gonna go capture the mage, and then it's just like, and we've sieged the mansion and we're done. It felt very fast.
Questy? Got it.
I would have appreciated maybe a bit more layering to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have liked a little bit more too. I think the thing that this one did better for me too is I was very invested in the mystery immediately in the book. So the hook of the story. What did you think about the hook of the story? Did you like the intrigue behind it? What is special about this toad? I mean, it's your MacGuffin item, right? But did you like how it was set up at all?
I think immediately the good hook, because Amira eventually sees it, but I saw it right away. I think the reader's supposed to, is Corbin gets his fingers cut off, and then it showed like he got his fingers cut off at some other point, and then he gets killed right as he gets to his home.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't particularly make sense. Why would they torture him and then kill him?
Right
at his house. That doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So it does feel like something else is at play. And so I liked that mystery.
Yes. Yeah, it does do it a little bit extra of now you're asking the question of, yeah, wait, why? Yeah. Why would it's anybody
probably,
do that?
These are probably not the same people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that made it a lot of fun. But yes, okay, anything else for plot before world building?
Yeah, let's go into it.
World building, I gave it 3.5. Good.
I did too. 3.5. It asked some fun questions. It left you in a world where it was far more mystical, mysterious. A highlight for me was the graveyard and just everything in there. That the graveyard's guardian of if blood is spilled in the graveyard, that they basically come out and just mog them. Like they kill whoever spills blood in the graveyard. Yep. But then the grave robbers of that also turns people into statues. And so, like, these graves are actually just full of treasures and no one has been able to, like, rob the graves. Those are little fun details of, like, that's weird. That's really weird to have in a graveyard. And the fact that also she doesn't know, this seems like a big deal that most people would be aware of.
Yeah.
And yet not aware of it. Strange.
Yeah, it's a weird mix of epic and absurdist and urban fantasy.
Yeah.
It's all three of those because you got your weird whimsical stuff that is just, it makes sense in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's in this thievery world, but at the same time makes it fun. And it's not just the weirdness of it that's interesting. There's genuine questions about the larger world that I'm curious about. So it's even less so about the blade that she got at the end and her MacGuffin item, more so about like the war of the gods that happened beforehand and how Aevis, the Red Hand, being so old and being pre-cataclysm and the little bit of backdrop we got that she felt so small and insignificant in this world in the same way Lys Locke Lamora, how mm-hmm. Locke Lamora felt in that book. You just feel small and then this big world's happening around you. That's what I felt throughout this. That's why I kind of got in her perspective, was very micro fantasy, just dealing with immediate problem. But then all around her were more powerful forces. And not just mm-hmm. the antagonists, but her friends. Just she felt like the most debuffed in the group of...
Yeah. Her set of skills does not particularly help the situation unless it's like the one thing that she's good at was, you know, sneaking in mm-hmm. and stealing things. And she does that once in like before the midpoint.
Yes.
After that, it is her leaning on other people and just like kind of being pulled along for the ride and, you know, mm-hmm. trying. She is out of place when it comes to battling gods and demons and magi and so.
And she even gets surprised every now and then when she's walking back to Holgrid's house. When she's walking back to Holgrid's house and he talks through the wood of the door. Hey, or
yeah.
It just stuff you'd expect to be wacky in this kind of world. But where I got more invested was when we met the Anat and the person that was eyeing her a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And when we met him and he was explaining more of the backdrop of why that item's very important. And let me show you why. And gives us that example of him turning into that bestial. I don't know what the correct word would be for that, but that's where it made it more intriguing of, okay, this is a series where there's a wider world out here. If I was to read book two, I'd be interested of, oh yeah, I can see the whole,
there's at least a few more books, the other, destroy the other seven MacGuffins type of deal to let the other god out. I'm with you. I also like the philosopher guy that, basically had the god of knowledge talking through the servant and giving and her going, I didn't know you could talk. And it's like, I didn't know the god of secrets, you know, said anything.
Oh, yeah. The god of secrets, more like the god of your silence sometimes.
Yeah. And she's the whole concept of this is a place to store things of like this is where you like it's safe. Things here are safe. You don't accrue interest, but like this place that hoards all of this knowledge. You can go there and ask questions and get things answered, but it's also like a bank where you just kind of just store something and it keeps it secure. And just this kind of god of hoarding knowledge and everything like that was cool. But ultimately, they're very silent. The god is, of course, why would the god talk to you? Like, keep secrets. And then so it talks to Amira and she's like, why are you doing this? It's like, well, now you have a secret that I actually talk to people. Keep that a secret, please. It's like, all right.
That was good.
Yeah. All right, God, thanks for the help.
It makes a good bit of humor and action. There was a lot of that. And I think as far as world goes, the atmosphere, that was the most fun part of the world. Like, okay, I'm not going... Okay, there's other book twos I'm looking forward to where it's, oh, I can't wait to find out that mystery. So the one thing I disliked, the one thing I liked other than the prose about Empire of Silence when we started Sun Eater was, okay, the world has me very invested. Now, obviously, that high space opera world, I'm way more invested in this story. But this one... The atmosphere was a lot more fun. Yeah. It's just the wackiness of it.
I could definitely see there's enough questions in that world where I could see this being a great book too to pick up in between some of the other books that we're reading.
It feels easy to get transported back as well. When I was there, I was immersed in the it's fun. If there's not really, I don't really have a negative. Why is 3.5 not higher? Just more so. Hey, it's not comparisons. You know, I'm
sure
there's.
It's good.
It's good. I'm not going like, oh my goodness, this world is everything. It's just fun. Yeah. Anything else you have for world building?
No. I just like those details.
What about prose?
I originally had a thought to give it a 2.75, but I think now on reflection of as we're talking through the book, I think it'd be right to say 3.25 ultimately.
I give it a 3.5. Good. Yeah. Most of my ratings were 3.5 here. I had 1.3. So mine was very consistent. I think this book had a consistent quality to each of the categories. Mm-hmm. Personally, I think, you know, it did everything very competently and in a fun way.
Mm-hmm.
For the pros, why'd your mind change? What was the thought process for you? Why was it 2.75 at first, now somewhat good?
So now thinking through more of the individual scenes when we're talking about characters and the banter back and forth and how with a steady hand it was done, it wasn't overblown, that I can remember some of those conversations and a few of those lines were funny. It just
I'm laughing thinking about it.
I'm like, oh, yeah, better than I thought.
Yeah.
As I'm going through it, it just felt really quick and maybe this is to his credit of it felt when I was reading it very fast and to the point, almost when I'm reading it almost too much so of like, oh, a little on the nose. We're moving.
Mm-hmm.
But now in hindsight, like that can be done very poorly of where everything is on the nose. Everything's way too quick. You don't because you're not spending enough time to dance around and like. Actually show the reader something, but he does a good job of actually showing enough and telling a lot. So it's a good balance.
Yeah. Good balance. And as far as, you know,
character voice is also good.
Yeah. Character voice is a standout. I think a lot of the quips and dialogue was also fun. And that is a lot of the draw for me, going back to Amira. I think if we had a different protagonist, I'd not like this book as much.
Sure.
So she was able to pull me along and how she would see the world and her narrative point of view. I keep thinking back to how her house is described, to how she views, you know, we're talking about that prison scene of what she was yelling at. It's not, you know, that's part of her character, but also just the fun thing she's saying about him. And just, hey, hold up the scene you described. Hold up a second. Let me go
beat this guy.
And a lot of that I noticed with the style, the prose. So as you put it, there was, the plot is very quick and very fast, but at the same time, a lot of the sentence structure is very, very short sentence, as in, which keeps the pace kind of fast as well. And I think that this author uses it, Michael McClung, Michael McClung uses it really well. It works with the story very well. I think I mentioned this in Emotional Impact, but it still sticks out to me when she was just describing herself. The narrative was describing herself and saying that. You know, men, they come and go, and look at her house. Like, men come and go, the knives stay. Just something like that. That both it does the prose does multiple things where it does something funny, you know, emotionally hits of what a funny way to put that. But also builds character. And also, it does several things at once and also builds the world. So I feel like a lot of the pros here was both world, atmosphere, and fun, and also character work. Most of the pros to me did both world and characters things. And that was the more impressive part about it. It wasn't just this, here's your character description. Let me give you all this. Now here's your layer of this. There was info dumps, of course, with the Knot and other characters, but it was few and far between. It was normalized, yeah.
At worst, the info dump was also done in a more entertaining way and enough quips along the way that it was not just
what a fun
straight
way
info dump.
Oh, she would totally put it that way. Oh, of course this character would do that, yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, why good and not great or better than that? There is still a lot of that. What you felt with the plot, I felt more with the prose sometimes of the staccato. But otherwise, really good.
There's also a fun, I forgot to mention this in the characters, but I'll mention it here at the end, is how many hidey holes she has and how many, how many places that she's paying rent to.
Oh, when she
has lot. Damn, she's real paranoid.
She is.
She doesn't have like one home base. She has, I think in this book alone, at least four.
I'd be surprised if you undercounted that. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
And there's plenty more. Like, yeah. So you're starting to go like, man, how much money does she have? She makes a lot of money.
Yeah, she does.
Now those hidey holes kind of allowed her to go learn new things and go to new locations, but so added to the plot and the world, but it was just also character work of it's hilarious that she has another hidey hole that just endless.
Yeah, totally.
She's renting out a quarter of the city.
Well, anything else you want to add for the Thief of Pulled on Troubles Braids?
Hey, you want a good urban fantasy heist? Urban fantasy, actually, it's not a heist. What would it be?
Revenge story.
Revenge mystery.
Yeah, revenge mystery.
Yeah.
That's the way I put it.
Go ahead, check this book out.
If you haven't just listened to the whole spoiler section.
But you probably listened to it at this point.
We have it 5th out of 8th. We'll see what our last two SPFBOs are, which is the next one.
Lost War.
The Lost War. And that's then the Grey Bastards is the last one.
Yep.
So we'll see, where does this end up? Will it stay at 5? Then we'll do it after we do all of them. We should do like a little quick, what's our final saying? And what's our final verdict?
Yes. Yeah. Sounds good.
All right. We'll see you next episode, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.